Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Good morning, Derry Farrell.
Good morning, how are you doing?
Delighted you're here. You've been great during the lockdown, one of my favourite guests. You've just released two new songs. Tell me about this.
Yeah, I released the lockdown single. I recorded it in the kitchen in the house, actually.
And as you do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it couldn't go anywhere, so it was great. So I recorded one called The Breakers Go Back on Full Time, which is for all those people who are itching to get back to work. I understand what it's like yourself, actually. And I recorded The Parting Glass as well, so... I can give you a verse of The Breakers if you want.
Yeah, give me the whole thing of The Breakers. And just, fantastic. You've got a beautiful bouzouki. Tell people about this bouzouki.
It's a really nice, it's the newest addition to my bouzouki family, actually. It's a bridge pin, cedar top, Joe Foley bouzouki tuned to C for all the nerds out there like myself, do you know?
Girl.
And it's just a beautiful instrument and it suits the song really well.
So, off you go, Derek.
Okay, here we go. So. Oh, it's Ange, you're if the news be true, the store bill's the first thing I'll pay. A grand parlour suite for the lounge I will buy, and an organ for Bridgie Ray. A me calico short, I'll throw it in the dirt, in a new one will I could shine. And the very next chance I'll put ye a missing pants when the breakers go back on full time. Our troubles there over Mrs. Murphy, the Dutchman next door tells me straight that the mines go back full time on Monday. That's what he tells me anyway. And the boss, he told Michael this morning, as he was just entering the mines, that the coal is quite scarce around Philly. Now the breakers go back on full time. Oh, it's unsure if the news be true, the store bill's the first thing I'll pay. A grand parlour suite for the lounge I will buy, and an organ for Bridgie Ray. A me calico short, I will throw it in the dirt, in a new one will I could shine. And the very next chance I'll put ye a missing pants when the breakers go back on full time. Oh, I'll ne'er stick me fist in the wash tub. Ah, the Chinaman, he'll get my wage. I'll ne'er pick the coal from the turf bank. Ah, we'll buy everything ready-made. Oh, and we'll dress up our children like fairies and build a big house good and fine. And we'll move right away from the roundheads when the breakers go back on full time. Oh, it's Ash, you're if the news be true, the store bill's the first thing I'll pay. A grand parlour suite for the lounge I will buy, and an organ for Bridgie Ray. A me calico shirt, I'll throw it in the dirt, in a new one will I could shine. And the very next chance I'll put ye a missing pants when the breakers go back on full time. Oh, and the very next chance I'll put ye a missing pants when the breakers go back on full time.
God bless your voice, Derry, at this hour of the morning, singing live, socially distant from me, of course, at the other end of the studio. And that song, if people want to get it, what is on Derry.com?
You can get it. It's actually available for download on Bandcamp and Amazon, and it's on Spotify and that as well.
Great.
So, and if you go over to me website, you can see it's all there, all the details. I'm on Facebook as well. I'm still doing the COVID Corner sessions. I've got the T-shirts. I got one today. So, that's at 10 o'clock on Sunday as well, 10 o'clock in the evening on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and scroll over and check
it out. And of course, you won the BBC Folk Award winner for your voice, and you recently guest hosted their iconic folk show on BBC Radio 2 with presenter Mark Ratcliffe. You're the second musician to ever been asked to do that.
It was absolutely amazing. Yeah, exactly. Like, I was asked to come on, and he said to me, you can take control of the remote control and just talk about what songs we love, the two of us together. And it was fantastic, yeah.
You do have a great voice. Look, you're fine. You're going to sing maybe a verse or two, which is the other single you released, Parting Glass. And I think you did this for all the, I suppose, the people who suffered during COVID-19.
Sure, yeah, exactly. And I'll give you a verse of that song. I'll burst straight into it. Okay.
So. Yeah, take your time. Put down the bouzouki.
Yeah, indeed. Of all the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company, and of all the harm that e'er I done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, by memory I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. Oh, if I had money enough to spend, and leisure time to sit a while, there is a sweetheart in this town, and alas, she has my heart beguiled. Her rosy lips and her rosy cheeks, I own she has my heart enthralled. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be with you all. Oh, of all the comrades that there I had, and they're sorry for my going away, and of all the sweethearts that e'er I loved, they'd wish me one more day to stay. And as it falls upon my lot, that I shall rise and you shall fall, I'll gently rise and softly call. Good night and joy be with you all.
That's just beautiful, Derry. Thank you so much. Thanks for coming in. We'll chat again soon.
Delighted.
I'm now going straight to another great singer, songwriter in the line. Good morning, Brona Gallagher.
Good morning, Miriam. How are you?
Wasn't that beautiful?
That was just, it took all my strength not to just roar out of me here in the house. I was, I had the arm going. I was just giving a sock there. What an incredible voice. The passion, stunning.
Now, listen, you're going to tell me about Metal na Mban. Remind people, I know the final show is coming up, and what it's for. It's all about Women's Aid.
It's a fundraiser for Women's Aid, yes, on Metal na Mban on TG Jar. It'll be Sunday the 5th of July at 9:30 p.m. And we've already had a beautiful sort of run of the show over the last few weeks, Miriam, and it's been very well received, and people have been extremely generous towards this vital fundraiser at the moment for Women's Aid. So we've had the incredible Mary Black. Mary, we're singing No Frontiers. All of the ladies are involved. Wallace Bird and Imelda Mays reading some of her beautiful poetry as well, and Loa. So yeah, it's been quite a feat for TG Cahir to bring everybody together in this quite difficult time, as you can imagine. Mm. So, and yeah, you know, extremely important. Unfortunately, Women's Aid have had a major 39% rise in phone calls in the first period of isolation from the end of March to the third week of May. They received 4,000 calls. So obviously major problems are going on. And, you know, I was speaking with Sarah, the head of Women's Aid, the other day, and just trying to get a wee bit of insight to obviously what the ladies are trying to deal with, and they're in the men that work there, and you know, it's pretty pretty upsetting stuff when you hear actually what the women are ringing up about. And you know, obviously a lot of the women that are ringing up, Miriam, they can't even speak, you know, on the phones. So as you know yourself, I know you're involved in Women's Aid too, so you know, very important organization, and the work that they do, and the obviously all the information is on the websites that people want to donate, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And the lovely thing is, the song we're going to listen to, obviously, No Frontiers, it was recorded, didn't you all record it kind of remotely and separately, and yet it all worked brilliantly in the end together?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, none of us could meet up, you know, with our other musical partners and stuff, so we all recorded it separately. So Cian Borland and I, Cian, the great pianist and composer, he and I recorded our track separately. And then the TV studio mixed everything together, so everybody just recorded in their own homes, you know. And yeah, I mean, it's obviously been the new revolution in recording music and making videos. So yeah, it's obviously the great Jimmy McCarthy song, the No Frontiers. But no, you know, really, really important, I think, in times like this, obviously, when artists can come together, and there's been some extraordinary stuff that we've seen globally, really, where people have been doing fundraising. I think just in our own country, obviously, you know, Women's Aid, they have just been there constantly in the background for people, and they let people know that the lines are opened all the time, and, you know, the women that are struggling, that are living in such terror, that, you know, the number is there, 1-800-34-1900. The website is there. And, you know, Miriam, I think it's important to use a platform, obviously, like your great show, to talk about what actually is going on in these homes that women are experiencing, and the abuse, not just the physical abuse, the mental abuse, the sexual abuse that's going on, that the women, you know, are sometimes just so controlled and so terrified that they can't speak out. They don't have any mobile phones to speak out. These issues run right under the control of what they're wearing, and money and phones, you know, being accessible. So obviously, if people are living in this horrific situation, that their families sometimes are also afraid to speak out if they think it's going on, that they're going to get the person into more trouble. But I think it's vital that anybody that's listening at the moment, that they know that they can also make that call to Women's Aid if they're concerned about a loved one. And obviously they don't want to ignite anything, but, you know, this is a crisis situation for people, that we know that, you know, the abuse, it's over. Like, speaking to Sarah the other day, she came up with some great soundbite. She was saying, abuse is designed to override the instinct and to dislocate and to get into your head. And that's very important, I think, for young women at the moment to realise that, because the abuse doesn't just end when people leave a home or a situation, or they realise a young man that they might have met online or socially, obviously, you know, with all that's going on at the moment, there's a lot more dating apps being used. But young women especially understand that, you know, bullying online, commenting about your outfits, making young women wear certain outfits that are completely inappropriate, this is all part of the abuse umbrella that all comes under it, you know, and help is there. And if something doesn't feel right, then it's usually wrong. You know, so your instinct is very important. It's unfortunately, a lot of abusers, they're masters of manipulation. And that's what we really have to understand as women and vulnerable people, and children obviously as well are involved in this. You know, this is a very clever manipulation that is designed to unhinge and unearth you. And this is when we start to need to be really aware of what's going on, you know.
And as Bronagh, you said, just the number again, before we listen to the song, which is raising money, obviously, for Women's Aid. And if anyone would like to donate, they can do so by texting the word ACTION to 50300, and you just donate €4. But that number you gave out earlier, it's 1-800-34-1900.
I try so people can remember 1-800-34-1900, and that's the helpline for Women's Aid.
Okay.
And, well, you know, speaking with Sarah, that there's people there all the time, very experienced, skilled people that are doing an extraordinary job, and they will set women up with the next phase of where they can go, obviously, for the shelters and stuff.
Well, look, Brona, as ever, I love chatting to you. Mel and the Mon will be on TG Cahir on the 5th of July at 9:30. And we're now going to go out listening to all of you singing Jimmy McCarthy's brilliant song, of course, No Frontiers. Thanks, Brona. Slán.
Thank you. Go to Mahagat.
Slán.
If life is a river and your heart is a boat, and just like water, baby, baby, born to float. If your life is a wild wind, blows way on high, and your heart is a Amelia, dying to fly. Heaven knows, no. I've seen heaven in your eyes.
Must have sent your tavernier in Jerusalem Lane. She never found a finer God on screen yet today. I just can't meet out the Darugon.
For the spark, warmer for the spark,
to hold us till the day when fear will lose its grip and heaven has its way. Large day.
Denise Welsh is one of the UK's most recognisable faces and successful actresses, from her roles in Coronation Street to being one of the Loose Women panellists. But for the past 30 years, she's been living with depression. And during her time on Coronation Street, she had two nervous breakdowns. She also drank too much, but depression is something she can't control, and she calls it her unwelcome visitor, which is also the name of her new memoir. And she joins me now. Good morning, Denise Welsh.
Good morning, Miriam. How are you?
Thanks so much for joining us. It's a great read. And I was watching you in Loose Women the other day. Tell us when you first got depression.
Well, Miriam, it started for me 31 years ago, which is when I had my eldest son, Matty. So prior to having a baby, I had had not one day of any kind of mental illness, psychiatric illness. I used to say I'm depressed if the weather was bad, like we do throw the word around. And I understand that unless you've had it. So mine started 5 days after I had my baby as a very, 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 very severe postnatal depression to the point that I was ultimately hospitalized. And I was on the verge of what's called a puerperal psychosis. And I want to say to anybody listening who may be pregnant or who is suffering a bit at the moment, many, many, many people have this condition and go on to make a complete recovery. But sadly, I didn't. And it opened up a tendency to depression in me. And I've lived with that condition for 31 years now.
And were you able to bond with your little baby Matthew at the time, Denise?
The initial bond was immediate. After a pretty tough labour, 42 hours, that was fun. But there were no particular complications, and out he came. And I was in a private hospital simply because the hospital I had been allocated to have him in was having problems, and it just wasn't the right environment for me. But the nurses would come into me and say, "You're the only one who hasn't pulled the cord. If you're anxious, you're a really unanxious mum." And I was. And then we took him home 5 days later. And that's when it started for me. And I just lost all sense of reality. And it was a very, very complicated, stressful, horrible time.
You say in the book, Denise, that you think of those who live with depression, like you're like a tribe, and that members of the tribe are much stronger than people think. Where does that strength come from? And does it come from learning how to manage the illness?
I think it does. And I think we're a tribe because it's one of those illnesses. It's not going, "Oh, you don't understand," because many, many people do. And that's what I hope this book does. But it's one of those illnesses, Miriam, that it is very hard to show people, which is why I documented an episode of depression last year, which indeed spawned the book. So many people historically have seen depression and melancholia, as it used to be called, as a weakness. And in fact, the reason I say tribe is because those people who survive depression and don't succumb to the ultimate way of stopping the pain are survivors. And I feel that we are a tribe. And I feel that I am a voice for the tribe because there is a lot of people who are still living with some kind of guilt and shame and stigma and taboo around this illness. My analogy is always that you wouldn't go up to someone who had an incredibly serious physical illness, such as cancer, dare I say, and say to them, you know, in bed, "Well, you've had this a month now and you look fine. Honestly, to me, you look fine. So I think you should get up, put your trainers on and come out with me and get a bit of exercise." You wouldn't dream of saying that. But that's what we who live with depression have on a daily basis. Unless you are surrounded, like myself, with people who understand and love you. And my mum used to say to me in the early days, because she had to take time off work to be with me, she used to say, "You will get better." And she didn't know if I would at that time. But that's what this, I want this book, Miriam, to be a book that those with depression and anxiety understand, and those who don't will hopefully learn how to.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you, despite all of this, living with depression, you have this stellar career as an actress. Coronation Street was watched by 20 million people. But during that, you had two nervous breakdowns, didn't you?
I did. I'm a blooming good actress, Miriam.
You sure are.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, you know, there were assets to me being in the chosen career that I have, in that maybe I was a little bit more used to putting on the painted smile than a lot of people are capable of doing, because I guess it's in my DNA being an actress. But I was asked a year or so ago to write a letter to my 16-year-old self, and it was a very cathartic exercise to do. And the main thing that came out of it is that I said to her, "I can't stop happening what will inevitably happen. You know, you may get this mental illness, but be kinder to yourself." And during Coronation Street, it was nothing to do with Coronation Street, the wonderful show that it was and is, you know, today. It was the fact that I was dealing with this under a very, 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 very big workload, and also having moved my family down to the Northwest from the Northeast initially reluctantly. And I just felt, and then my illness was just, it was getting worse and worse. I wasn't on the right medication. And although I was if I ever spoke to anybody about it, I would always say, you must talk about it and you must tell people what you've got. But I wasn't myself. I wasn't, because I knew that a machine like Coronation Street would kind of break down if you weren't there. And in fact, it wouldn't have. That was just in my head. So I was, it sounds very dramatic, but, you know, I was getting up at 5 a.m. to go to work and literally crawling around the floor, trying to make myself sick. And that was because the physical act of vomiting might take away 10 seconds from the pain in my head. It was so crippling at one time that the depression was so thick that it twisted my face and my hands into sort of like an arthritic contortion. And that's what people don't understand, how the mental illness can manifest so hugely on the physical condition.
And do you know when it's going to come on now, Denise? Because obviously you sound great at the moment. There was a very moving piece the other day. Alistair Campbell, he suffers from depression, and he just was saying the other day online that it had just come on him suddenly. Like, do you know when you are going to be depressed?
No, rarely. Alistair and I have spoken about this, actually, because we've met each other several times, like, you know, through the mental health world. And his really echoes a lot of mine. Well, an example would be is that last September, which, touch wood, was my last serious episode of depression. And I was driving up to the Northeast with my friend Lisa, her two children, who are my son's godchildren. And we were driving up to see my beloved sister and her three foster kids. It was a joyous weekend. We'd been planning it for a couple of weeks. There was nothing in my mind except, God, kids, shut up, singing so loudly, you know, and laughing along to the music in the car. And we got to the Angel of the North. And I suddenly felt, as I explain it, as the colour draining from my life. I got a tingling in my palms, a metallic sensation in my mouth, and I knew that the unwelcome visitor was trying to get in. And by the time I got to my sister's, I made my excuses and went to bed. Everyone in my family understands my illness, but sometimes I still think, I just don't want to ruin your weekend. And I got up in the morning and impulsively, I dragged myself to the shower. And anyone who thinks that, you know, if you have depression, even having a shower is a monumental thing to do. And I picked up my phone and impulsively, I chronicled a 3-day episode of depression. And I was, when I was well enough to look, I was overwhelmed, blindsided by the response, because I have talked about my illness for 30 years. Mm. I was talking about this illness when I was a lone wolf, Miriam. Nobody I could access was talking, you know, in the public, I was talking about it. And it was a very lonely time. And that's why I feel and I hope that I've written the book that I needed when I was first poorly.
No, it's really good. And I think it will mean a lot to people. And I'll give the details of it in a moment. I can't let you go without talking about Loose Women. You've been a panel member, I think, since 2002. You say the team have been with you through everything from, say, Party Girl years to the new, you know, very straight Denise.
Yeah, very well. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about straight, but very sober, that's for sure. And a much happier, better together person. Giving up alcohol does not stop or cure depression, but it stops compounding it. And I am not the drink police. I didn't surround myself with sobriety. Lots of my friends still drink. It's just that I go to places for a couple of hours and then I can leave when they all get drunk. And people start telling me the same joke 45 times, of which I know I would have been guilty for many years. So those Loose Women girls have been with me, many of them, from the beginning. And they've shared my story. We now have the Lighten the Load appeal on Loose Women, which is incredibly popular and important to people, that we have a voice for those with mental illness. And, you know, I was on as a guest last week for the first time in 18 years to talk about this. And it was very emotional and has impacted on a lot of people, because although we've come such a long way, I mean, God, if I could tell you how far we've come if we had longer, but we still have a long way to go. And of course, with coming out of lockdown, there is a tsunami of mental health issues. And I just want people to know that back in my day, I had no way to access help apart from the family and the odd understanding doctor that I had. But now we have Google. And if you are waiting in a line to get professional help from your doctor or hospital, which may be a long time coming, if you just click on depression support, help for depression, there are so many groups and people and organizations that can help you bridge the gap until you can get professional help.
Well, look, Denise, I've loved speaking to you. Your book, The Unwelcome Visitor, by you, Denise Welsh, it's published by Hodder and Stout, and it's a really honest book, and I think it will be very important to many people who have a similar experience to you and otherwise as well. Denise, thanks for chatting to us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Miriam. Yeah. Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Mind you. Well, it was a glorious night in Merseyside on Thursday when Liverpool won the Premier League. Lots of fans in the city, lots of fans here in Ireland, and of course, right across the world, celebrated their first English top flight title in 3 decades. Their manager, Jurgen Klopp, was moved to tears. And as you may have heard, the celebrations engulfed the city. Let's get a flavour.
This club means everything to the people. So it's our job to show that it means absolutely everything for us as well. It's a lot about emotion, the intensity, how the supporters live. Where did you ever hear a better message than you'll never walk alone? It's the most beautiful song in the world. Everybody feels it, everybody loves it, and everybody gets the message. In your darkest moments, you are not alone. I love that. We are Liverpool. And that means we have to entertain the people, and we have to show all the desire, to show all the love for the game. We will all be together soon. There will be a moment for us. For now, tell the world we are Liverpool, champions of England.
When you walk
Liverpool are champions
through a storm.
This is the man they love.
Older.
And I'm now joined by two Liverpool players from the past, Ian Rush and Ray Houghton, who were both involved in 1990. Thanks both to you, both of you, for joining me. Good to you first, Ian Rush. You remain the top striker for Liverpool ever. What were your emotions when the team won?
It was it's like a long wait, and it was something. It's hard to describe, really, because Liverpool weren't playing. You know, Chelsea beat Manchester City for them to win it, but we've waited so long, so the extra wait wasn't too bad. But it was absolutely delighted for Liverpool Football Club, but also the team, the Liverpool team and Jurgen Klopp.
Explain to me how important Jurgen Klopp is, Ian, and then I'll go to you, Ray. Jurgen Klopp.
Well, Jurgen Klopp is what he generates. He generates positive energy. Now, before the COVID and everything, every time you met him, he would give you a big hug. And the next thing you want to do, you want to go and give someone else a big hug. that's how infectious he is. And, now you see a big smile on his face. So he's always giving positive energy to the players, to the coach and staff, but also to the fans. When you watch him on the sideline, he gets the crowd going. If they've gone dead, then the crowd get the players going. And his man management is absolutely first class. He's also a very good tactician as well. So that, for me, stands out above anyone else.
Ray, were you emotional the other night?
Yeah, I think two emotions went through my head, Miriam. One was relief. Finally, it was over. We've been waiting 30 years for this moment, don't forget. And enjoy, joy, because obviously the team got to where they wanted to get to, which was to win the title. And for the fans, who've been so patient, who've seen and heard so much about previous Liverpool sides and what they had achieved, and they had to wait and enjoy the moment. So it was absolutely spectacular. And just on Jurgen Klopp, when he first came to the club, Miriam, he said, "I want to make the fans and the players, instead of dreamers, believers. I am going to win the title in the next 4 or 5 years." And he absolutely put his word. And there were 7 managers prior to him, 1990, who came to the club and probably thought they could win it, but weren't bold enough to say they were going to win it. He did. He came in there. He understood what the Liverpool fans wanted. He understood what Liverpool as a city is about. And then he brought them the title. Remarkable achievement. And not only that, his recruitment over the last 4 or 5 years has been exceptional. The players he brought to the club, the attitude that they've had, they've all been of the one mindset, and that is there's a togetherness every time they go out to play. And for the last 2-3 seasons, they've been the most consistent side in the English game.
And Ian, of course, both you and Ray played back in 1990 when you won it before. I think your manager then, if I'm right, I'm not a soccer expert, was Kenny Dalglish. But what was it about your team, both of you, Ian, in 1990 and this team of 2020 that elevates them above others, that enabled you to win that league?
Well, first of all, I think it's a team spirit. Ray will tell you as well that we had an incredible team spirit in there. And that's what Jurgen Klopp's got with his team now. The best thing about a manager is keeping the players who are not playing happy. That's so difficult to do. And Kenny Dalglish managed to do that when we last won it. And Jurgen Klopp is doing that again. So I just feel the team spirit in there. And we had belief. Even when we went a goal behind, like the last time we won it, we beat QPR 2-1, and we went a goal behind. But we still knew, and the crowd still knew that we were capable of winning. So the crowd got behind us, and we responded, and we won 2-1. So, and this is exactly the same, this team now. The fans believe in everything, where, as Ray was saying, there's a few great managers before Jurgen have tried and failed. Where, I think maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, if they go 1-0 down, you could hear like 50,000 people going, and that's infectious to the players, and the players start panicking. But this time, I noticed this season where they have gone a goal behind, the crowd get behind the team, and that helps the players. So I think it's very similar where everyone's in it together.
Yeah, and the relationship, tell me about it, Ray, between the club and the fans. I mean, I know all clubs and fans are, it's very close, but Liverpool's frequently called a family. We've seen how Liverpool treated Sean Cox, and actually we were in touch with his family. He's so happy the club won. So does it all come down to you'll never walk alone? Tell me about that relationship between fans and club.
Well, to me, I've been a pro for 20 years and I've played a variety of clubs. 5 years at Liverpool, it was a unique club. I wasn't a Liverpool supporter when I went to the club, but you leave the club being a supporter because of the fans and the history with the club, and you're part of a unique group. Now, I've had messages from Australia, from San Francisco, about Liverpool winning the title. Just Liverpool fans who I've met in my journeys who have came back to me and said how overjoyed they are that Liverpool have won the Premier League for the first time. And it's been a first this season, Miriam. First time they'd ever won the World Club Championship. The current champions of Europe, having won it last season, and now they are the Premier League title winners. For the fans, this is something that they have been looking for a number of years. And don't forget, there was adversity at first when Jurgen came in. Liverpool lost the Europa League final. They lost the League Cup final. They lost the Champions League final to Real Madrid. So they knew about losing. But what you were asking Ian there about what's the difference or the similarity between, us in 1990 and today is they've got a camaraderie and a team spirit, and their treasure is important. And these players have gone out and played with consistency, which is quite incredible. Even far better than our day, because you know what? This season, this group only dropped 7 points. 7 points in 31 games. That's one defeat and two draws. Our consistency level wasn't as good as that. If you want to go back, they could be on for a record points total this season to outdo Manchester City's points a couple of seasons ago. That's how good they have been, and very similar to what we did in having lost it to Arsenal in 89. We didn't feel sorry for ourselves. We come out the following season in 1990 and we won it. Similar to the lads last season, 97 points wasn't enough. They come out this season and they show the consistency once again. That comes from the top and it filters down the pyramid to the players and everyone involved. But the fans are a large part of that. And it was a great shame that they're not going to be there when the lads finally pick up that Premier League title.
Finally, Ian, I mean, everyone's come through lockdown and almost all over the world. The importance of sport, and obviously for you guys, for soccer, it means so much to fans, doesn't it?
Unbelievable. It's when sport or football was back on TV, everyone seemed to cheer up and everything, because it doesn't matter what if it's not your own team, you'll still be watching that sport. It's so infectious and everything, and I think it was a big boost for everyone that football did get started again. That's what it's all about, because it's been difficult times for everyone, but I think a bit of light at the end of the tunnel was when the Premier League started again, and I'm sure the ratings on TV must go everywhere. So I think it's great for it to be back. But one thing's important. I think we do have to make sure we stay safe, and that's what it's all about. And we can enjoy the success in your own home, because one day will come, and it will come, where it will be safe and we will celebrate with the fans. But we have to be patient a little bit more, and that time will definitely come though.
Final word to you, Ray, the importance of sport for people.
Yeah, absolutely huge, Miriam. I agree with Ian what you just said there. The most important thing at the moment is the safety of everyone concerned. Where we can't have fans back in the stadium until we either have a vaccine or something that's going to work long term. But the fans will enjoy it when they finally get back. But sports are a huge part of our lives. It's great to see it back, and I think it brings joy and happiness to people as well.
Well, listen, Ian Rush, Ray Houghton, you both brought lots of joy and happiness during your careers. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak to me this morning, and mind yourselves.
Thank you, Miriam.
Mind yourselves. We move on finally this morning. The new Taoiseach appointed his nominees to the Seanad last night, and one of those is traveller activist Eileen Flynn, and I'm really delighted to say she joins me now from her home in Donegal. Good morning, Eileen.
Hi, Miriam. How are you?
Congratulations.
Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Oh, I'm honoured. Congratulations. Are you delighted?
Absolutely thrilled. It's just unbelievable, you know, such a historic day, and tomorrow will be just a historic day again, just to be in there to feel part of the political system, you know.
And just to be clear, are you the first traveller elected? Because I know Pádraig McLaughlin's, I think, family came from travelling. Are you the first traveller to be elected to the Oireachtas?
Yes, myself and Pádraig would have had a conversation around this in March, actually. Pádraig wouldn't, myself and Pádraig had different traveller experience, you know. I was born and reared in a halting site, Pádraig wasn't, so we have different upbringings, but we're no less than each other, you know. Mm. So I don't think he fully identifies as being a traveller person, where I do, you know, because my mother and father were members of the traveller community.
Tell me about your upbringing. For people listening this morning, Eileen, who don't know as much as they should about Eileen Flynn, tell me about your childhood and where you did grow up.
I grew up in Ballyfermot in Ladbury Park, the oldest halting site in Ireland. I went to school in Ballyfermot. At the age of 10, I was in a really bad car crash. I lost my mother 9 days before that, and went down to secondary school, college, access course in Trinity, then to Ballyfermot College, which I loved. Ballyfermot College. Took a year out to work in the Irish Traveller Movement. My father was dying with cancer, and then went back to Maynooth after that, got a BA in community and youth work, and qualified as a community development worker, and then worked with the National Traveller Women's Forum.
And why do you think you succeeded, Eileen, you know, in getting all this education that maybe other people aren't lucky enough to get who grow up in the travelling background? I saw a lovely piece online last night that Emma O'Kelly, our RT correspondent, education correspondent, tweeted about you and getting your qualifications.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, you know. For me, I would have been a young person at risk of leaving school, and, you know, where I was suspended 8 times, I was expelled once, and I was one of those probably seen as a child a problem, you know. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, the school I went to, the teachers all believed in me and seemed to were something in me, you know, and for to having teachers to believe in their students, and not just seeing the traveller who's going to run off and get married and stuff, and because that's their culture, you know. But people just make these assumptions about travellers that are getting to know us as a community of people and getting to know us as individuals within a community, you know. So I was very lucky to have those opportunities.
When did you hear, I love to hear these stories, when did you get the call? When did you hear you were going to be nominated to the Seanad? Tell me.
Yesterday, I got a phone call from Taoiseach Micheál Martin, and it was the most amazing call I ever got in my life, you know. I wasn't too sure if I was going to get it or not, and to be nominated by three of the political leaders was phenomenal, you know. Mm. And to get it and for it to be me was just fantastic, you know. It was just brilliant. And I've obviously I worked really hard in a campaign. I had cross-party support. Thomas Pringle here in Donegal was absolutely phenomenal. And I worked alongside a fella called John Campbell, who was very supportive. And myself and him worked together on the campaign, you know. And my husband was really good. But yesterday, when Taoiseach rang around around the nomination, and my husband wasn't in the house, and I just rang him to tell him I wasn't feeling well and he had to come back so I wouldn't cause an accident or anything. And when he came back then, I told him, and he was just over the moon, you know.
Oh, did you celebrate?
Yeah, last night. I haven't seen my family in over 3 months due to the pandemic, you know. And Liam's family were all over, so it was really nice. We had a lovely celebration, you know. Ardra is a lovely town in Donegal, and people are very friendly in it, you know. So it was brilliant, Miriam. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, everyone online here is saying how happy that you got that appointment. So what happens tomorrow? Like, what's the plan?
The plan is, I'm not 100% sure. I know tomorrow is my first day, so I'll take it from there. I'll just go in and see what happens, you know. But I would have great support in the Dáil and in Shannadairn as well. I would have very good support with people like Mary Alice Higgins, Lynn Yuan, great people, like, you know. And to be fair to, and it's not something that, like, a few years ago I'd even imagine myself saying until I went for the campaign and stuff, to get the level of support that I got from cross parties and from independents was absolutely phenomenal.
What, now it's obviously very early days, Eileen, and you're still taking it all in, but what would you like to try and achieve? I know you've been a wonderful activist for travellers' rights, for equality. What would you like to try and achieve through your role in the Shannon?
Colette Callagher has started some great work, and traveller organisations has been involved in great policy changes within the Dáil. So it's basically looking at those policies, working with traveller organisations, and trying to bring about change for the traveller community. There's an education and a history bill, and I'm hoping that there's something I'll continue to work on and pass, you know. And then there's, I'd love to see hate crime legislation in Ireland for everybody, you know, equality of opportunities. We don't have it in Ireland, and it's around working with the people at the very end of Irish society. It's around working, for me personally, it's around working with black people, migrants, refugees, travellers, you know, the others in society, the people that we see as them. Mm-hmm. I'd like to work with those people that are seen as different and don't fit into boxes and don't have equality of opportunities, and bring that unique voice to around the table, you know. So that's it's to be able to have that space to do that and to work with, like, I've got a great circle of friends around me from many different organisations and individuals. And it'd be brilliant, like, and I know I'll still have their support and stuff, so it'll be brilliant to have that and to be guided by me great friends that I have around me, you know.
And all our listeners are saying, I'll give you just a flavour, so amazing listening to Eileen Flynn, so wonderful listening to Eileen Flynn. She's an amazing role model for girls and young women throughout this country. Another says, I'm so excited to watch Eileen Flynn shake up the Shannon and see all she achieves for women in the Travers and all of our society. I suppose you're going to be a role model for everyone. And will it also, do you think, inspire other young women who are within your travelling community to go on and to do great things like you have done, that they can do it?
The thing is, like, it's actually strange. I never ever say, oh, you can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it, because you can want to be something in life. However, there is obstacles, and the access of equality of opportunities, unfortunately, is not there for every area. Like, you know, young people in Ballyfermot wouldn't have the same opportunities as young people, say, in Black Rock or Fox Rock. Now, that's not taking anything away from any communities. I always say, give each other a hand up, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I'm not going to go in here and be their voice for black people, because I'm not black. you know, nothing about us without us. And I've always used that quote throughout my activism. Mm. So I'd like to work with and to bring that voice and bring people into the Shannon and let people speak for themselves. You know, and I think that's really important. And I do hope that other young travellers will, especially young traveller women, will look up and say, you know something, life is hard. But if you keep at it and stay at it. And again, it's if you believe in a young person, if you see potential in a young person, they might go on to be something that you never imagined, you know?
Final question. Did you wake up this morning and pinch yourself and think, this is true, this is really happening?
I woke up this morning and I said to my husband, I said, oh God, what am I going to do? You know, it's just been like, now I have got great confidence in myself that I'll be, you know, I'll be good. Yeah. And that I, like, absolutely phenomenal to get the nomination. It's like just been fantastic. Also, when you work hard for something as I did, it's just now to get it, it's like I do have to pinch myself, you know. And this is not something that happens for travellers all of the time. And it's just like Nan Joyce in the early 80s, you know, I've always looked up to Nan Joyce. I read about her and such. I've never had the privilege to meet her, unfortunately, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's just been absolutely phenomenal. And I hope that every traveller person in Ireland is absolutely very proud that now, you know, I may not be a voice for every 40,000 traveller and the island, but what I will do is I'll be a voice for equality and I'll try my very best to do the right thing.
You will be absolutely brilliant, Eileen. And listen, delighted for you. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Miriam. Yeah. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, thank you. And congratulations. Well done.